to the old me, scared and unseen. You're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Edna White. I am your host for Keeping It Real on Purpose. And this is the place where you show up. We talk about things around life and relationships, finances, physical and mental health, and so much fun. Again, my name is Edna White. I am your host. And today, I am excited to have Dr. Tana. Did I say that right? Tana, yep. Seth. Yay! See, audience, you guys know, I kind of mess people's names up. But Dr. Tana Session, and she is world-renowned, I'm hearing. She's a strategist, a speaker, and a consultant. Welcome to Keeping It Real, Dr. Tana.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Edna.
So how do you show up in the world? I want our audience to know this.
I show up dependent on the situation. So when I think about from a personal perspective, so I'm married, I have a son and a bonus son, and they're grown. My husband and I have been empty nesters.
Oh, okay.
13. So, you know, we kind of get to do whatever we want when we want, which is a great thing. We worked really hard to get here. So,
right.
That's one way I show up is, you know, as a wife and a mom. And
right.
Then the other way, when I think about the strategist and consulting work that I do, I show up as an accountability partner. I show up as someone who holds up a mirror in a loving, teachable, trusting, compassionate way to help my clients, whether it's CEOs and their leadership team or just individual employees, frontline employees, come to the realization of where their own belief systems have impacted their view of the world.
I see. And this has to do with the workplace, correct? A lot of your stress. Okay. I want to talk about, and I know we have just discussed it, you know, talking about racism or microaggressions in the workplace. And I know that's probably your forte, and that you hold the mirror up for that. That's great. So let's talk about that and how impactful that can be for anyone and how you start to work in that area.
Sure. So first, understand that microaggressions are a level of bias. It's also a form of discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are sensitive to that because they feel like everyone's being oversensitive and everyone wants to cancel culture and you can't say anything to anybody without hurting your feelings.
Right.
Some of that may be valid. However, a lot of microaggressions are based on stereotypes, and that's where we need to be able to define the difference.
Right.
So if I meet someone who, let's say, is of Asian descent, and they're new on my team, and they start to speak, and the first thing I tell them is, wow, your English is great.
Well, yeah, I've heard that before, yeah.
You know, yeah, because my assumption is that because they are of Asian descent, they're not from the United States,
right.
And they weren't born here, and as a result, their English, I'm surprised by how well they speak English.
Right.
Or telling a black person, you're so articulate.
Right.
Same concept, right? So your stereotype tells you, this person, I'm impressed by the way this person speaks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what we have to understand is what are microaggressions. Ultimately, what they do is they make people feel othered. They feel like they don't belong. They feel like they're not good. they feel like, you know, they're being treated differently than everyone else. And oftentimes they are marginalized, underrepresented groups or individuals from those groups within the workplace.
Right.
And they're being treated that way because of a stereotype that someone has, which is based on a bias.
Okay. Okay. So how does this play out on in the workplace? And let's take that part first.
Well, it starts off with how we engage and interact with each other.
Okay.
So in the workplace, we have, you know, hopefully a diverse workforce, and we may have assumptions that we make about people which create these spontaneous judgments that are based on some level of bias.
Mm-hmm.
The implicit bias says it's based on a stereotype or an attitude that you have about this person.
Right.
Because of whatever social category box they check, or multiple boxes, right? Because there's also the
right.
intersectionality of it all. And so when they view someone through that lens without knowing them or spending time getting to know them, they make assumptions. Like
mm-hmm.
I've used the example of when I was head of HR at a company, and I remember my office was on the executive floor because I was the chief HR officer. And I got on the elevator, and there was a visitor there, and they automatically assumed that I was an administrative assistant. And I was like, I can take you to the receptionist, and they'll be able to help you.
Right.
You know, I'm the chief human resource officer. And just the look on their face said, oops, but also, wow, right?
Right.
That was a microaggression. So even simple things, again, in our interactions with one another, a microaggression can be a look. You go into a store, you're a person of color, you go into a store,
mm-hmm.
and people look to see, what are you doing here? Or do you need to be followed? Or,
right.
you know, asking you multiple times, do you need help? Do you need assistance? Can I help you with anything? Right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're just browsing. So those are microaggressions, right? Because the assumption is I'm a person of color, in particular when I say black, and I'm probably going to steal something.
Right.
So that's how it plays out in the workplace, is that these individuals are having these experiences happen to them over and over and over again. So I tell people when I do trainings on this to think about it as a paper cut. So the first time you get a paper cut, Edna, you're not going to get a bandage, you're not going to go to the hospital, stitches. You know, you're going to shake it off and probably go on with your day.
Right.
But if you continually get that same paper cut in that same spot over
wow.
and over and over again, it becomes a trauma. You will have to go get a treatment. You will
oh,
have
yeah.
to get stitches. In the workplace, what that means is they are going to withdraw. They're going to do what everyone's talking about right now, quiet quitting.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to have reduced productivity, lower levels of engagement and motivation, and ultimately they'll probably leave if they don't just resign in the seat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we start seeing people just not being part of the group, not really having a voice, or not expressing their thoughts and opinions because of the fact that they've been treated this way time and time again. So they try almost to disappear.
Yeah. And I know I experienced that myself in my last position. It's really demeaning. And I didn't think that, you know, I hear people say, well, I'm strong, you know, and I can take that. And I'm like, I call myself very strong, you know, and I don't think so. And I was like, it couldn't take it. What could we do? Like, what as people of color, women of color, I know I'm a woman. So, you know, what could we do to start to change that for ourselves? I know for me, I left. I couldn't make them change their mind. And it was very difficult to help, you know, get them to change their mind. And I felt like I was always battling. It was a battle all the time. Is that what you've gotten in the past? Like, you know, talking?
Yeah. Those are very valid feelings. And sometimes we self-doubt those feelings, right?
Right.
Like being oversensitive or...
Right, and I was told that too, as well.
Yeah, like you start giving them the benefit of the doubt, right? And it's almost like you gaslight yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you start like thinking like, well, maybe it's me. Well, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Feelings are real, they're valid.
Right.
And so, you know, there are different ways that people approach dealing with microaggressions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three ways I talk about in my training. So one of the ways is you directly address it with the individual if you have a very open and trusting relationship with them, where you can make this a teachable moment and say, hey, you know, when I was in the meeting, I was presenting and you told me that I was articulate. I didn't really take that as a compliment. I'm hoping that's what you meant by it.
Right.
But let me explain to you why it's not. Right.
Right.
Because sometimes it's just a lack of self-awareness or knowledge even,
mm-hmm.
or education. So you call them into the conversation. Don't call them out. You call them in. You have a teachable moment. If you don't have that type of relationship with the person, then find someone who does it, you trust, that can either mediate the conversation with you, which I do encourage having you part of that conversation, or at least start to tee up the conversation with that individual
yes.
and say, hey, you know, Edna, when you told Tane that she was articulate in the meeting, I know you probably meant that as a compliment, but she is the only Black person on the team, and I've never heard you say that to anyone else. So you may want to have a conversation with her and just see if she thought it was a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, sometimes, again, that could work in your favor. If not, the person can be very defensive, say, hey, I didn't mean anything by it, or why
yeah.
are you so sensitive? Like, all of those things, right?
Right.
And that could be a natural reaction because they do feel embarrassed.
Right.
Or they feel like they've done something wrong, or, God forbid, you're calling them a racist.
Right. Yeah,
and then
God forbid.
The other way is people just don't do anything, right? They're
right.
comfortable in their own skin, and they feel like this happens all the time, it's not a big deal, or it doesn't bother me. But at the end of the day, if you're really honest with yourself, even if it's the 1,000th time that someone has said that to you,
yeah.
it's still that little
Exactly.
Right?
That little, it really is.
Mm-hmm. And you feel like, okay, that didn't feel good, but whatever, right? I'll
right.
prove them wrong. I'll prove them, you know, I'll prove myself better than what they think.
Right.
And so we put this pressure on ourselves to go over and above. So it's multiple ways I think people address microaggressions, deal with microaggressions,
mm-hmm.
You know, admit even if what they experience is a microaggression. And oh, by the way, you mentioned women, or being a woman, I too identify as female.
Mm-hmm.
And women experience microaggressions more than any other group in the workforce.
I believe that, yes. Mm-hmm.
And aside from that, you intersect that with women of color.
Right.
And they are the group that experiences microaggressions greater than any other group, regardless of what gender or ethnicity they
exactly.
have in the workplace.
And I'm seeing that a lot, Tana. I'm seeing that a lot with a lot of my clients as well. They're leaving positions because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very... You know, I know for myself, I was getting migraines and I never had a migraine in my life, you know, and it was really, it really, and you think about it, like you said, and I'm glad you said that being the only Black woman, I was the only Black woman in several meetings, and to hear just like when you're expressing something and you're sharing and, you know, the words that they say, you're like, oh, wait, if, you know, wait. If you're talking about a group of people and you say these people, that kind of disturbs me. So if you're saying that in around me, I guess you're just like lumping me in with whomever you're talking about because that's degrading. And when you kind of like say that, it's met with all kind of, then you get the faces, then you get the, you get the faces, you get the, now I'm not talking to you, or if you're coming on the meeting, I'm not going to be there. You know, all of this, you get all this this display of behaviors that when you do try to address it, it becomes now you're being overly sensitive.
Right.
You know.
I tell people, you know, they have to protect their peace. So you mentioned that some of your clients just leave their jobs. I've done the same.
Yeah.
I've also, you know, addressed those when I felt that, you know, someone did tell me in a, you know, in a presentation that, you know, you were so articulate or something like that.
Right.
And I talked to them about it afterwards. And the first thing they said was, well, that was a compliment. Well, a compliment can be in a microaggression. So
yeah, right.
Let me explain to you why that doesn't work for me. Right. Now, I don't speak on behalf of all Black people.
Right.
Or Black women or
just
women.
Me. Yeah.
It's my lived experience. Mm-hmm. Because that tells me that your impression of me is that I'm less than what I am.
Right.
Because you were surprised by how well I was able to.
Right.
Share my thoughts, my opinions, or present this data and this information, and that's a problem.
Right, exactly that, and I've addressed as well. I've addressed it, and it doesn't go through. It's they always stuck in. I have Black friends, and I'm like, then I'm like, yeah, but that's not
world.
Has nothing to do with what I'm talking to you about.
That's the number one defense, that, and I'm not a racist.
Yeah, I have Black friends. I was like, yeah, that I'm not talking about them right now. I'm talking about how you made me feel. And then when you don't have allies, how do you deal with not having any allies? Like you said, you know, get a mediator. The only other choice I would think would be to leave like I did, but I had no ally within the organization.
Yeah, and I've been in that situation as well. And when I think back on those situations, I did the exact same thing. I left over a period of time. I was like, this just isn't the place for me.
Yeah.
I don't feel I can be my best self, and I'm not valued or appreciated, and I don't feel included. I don't feel I belong. So again, understanding what those boundaries are for you is going to be different for every person.
Right.
You know, finding allies, I think, can be challenging. You know, as you mentioned, being the only, right? So whether it's the only woman, the only person of color, the only gay person, the only person with disability, you know, the only veteran, like the list goes on.
Yeah.
Finding an ally that is, A, willing to advocate on your behalf when you're not in the room.
Right.
Advocate on your behalf more so when you are in the room. So
right.
Using that voice and that power and privilege and influence in those moments. And then they're also willing to understand what your lived experiences are, although they may be completely different than theirs, without trying to validate or invalidate them.
Right.
So listening with an ear to really understand those experiences versus to respond and say, well, maybe you felt like this, or maybe it was that, or not everything is about race, or not everything's about gender. Well, for my lived experience, it has been.
Right.
So I think that's where, you know, we have to understand, like, what exactly is an ally, first and foremost? Like, it's not an individual, it's about the actions.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So who's willing to speak up in those moments? Who's willing to kind of put their neck out there? Like,
right.
Especially when they're part of the majority, but they may be part of the minority that feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they're willing to stand up against the others that look like them, think like them, to say, hey, that's not right.
Yeah.
And here's why.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point about migraines, I do want to go back to that
sure.
in a second, because the other thing about microaggressions is that they do impact health of those individuals that experience them.
Yeah.
And some people may discount that and say, how's that possible? It goes beyond mental well-being.
Mm-hmm.
It can also cause, multiple instances of anxiety and stress
yeah.
and depression.
Yeah.
And sometimes even thoughts of suicide.
Yeah.
And
I
so
was
that's
hearing,
the other
yeah.
thing people have to think about, you know, kids that are being teased in school that we maybe have heard about in the news that, you know, committed suicide. A lot of it was based on the fact that they experienced these microaggressions over and over.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
They didn't have the mental capacity in terms of either how to speak up for themselves or how to bring in other advocates, or maybe they did and things didn't change. And so they committed suicide as a result
sure.
of stress and anxiety and depression that they were dealing with. So it affects adults as well. And that's why they say that, people of color, Black Indigenous people of color, experience health conditions around that are related to stress and anxiety
mm-hmm.
and depression at an earlier age than their white counterparts.
It's true. I know I did. I never thought that I would experience that because, you know, I owned my own business for years, like 20 years. This is my first job. Okay. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I got, enough experience. They wanted me to work with them, you know, and housing. And I was like, I couldn't even fathom that this, you know, things were happening the way they were. And I'm like, this can't be, you know, like you said, I was gaslighting myself. I was gaslighting myself. And finally, it was getting me very sick. I literally had anxiety just to think about, I wasn't even going into the office, but just to think about going on to a meeting at 9 a.m. with them on Zoom, I got an excruciating headache. I must have gained like 6 wrinkles in the top of my head. It was really getting to me. I had finally had to say, you know, I got to go see the doctor. You know, I have to take time off and go to see the doctor because I knew I wasn't going to last any longer. I tried to push it, you know what I'm saying? Push it and push it, but it was just a lot. And it does affect you in your body, your mind, all of that.
Yeah.
It's very serious.
And, you know, it's unfortunate because people do try to gaslight you and make you think it's not real,
mm-hmm.
or again, that you're being too sensitive. And, you know, then you start to question.
Like, exactly.
Like, you know, if you are the minority and you're hearing this from multiple people, you're like, well, maybe I'm being too sensitive, or it's not that big of a deal.
Right.
Or, hey, I'm sure they didn't mean anything. You know, otherwise, we get along very well.
And, right.
Yeah, we start to talk ourselves out of the fact of what that experience is.
Right. Yeah. I totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
With Dr. Dana, Dr. Tana, I know. I was trying to keep it in my head. Dr. Tana, can you share like a story about maybe one of your clients that really impacted your life and changed like the dynamic of like your business?
Ooh, so many. Are you thinking corporate client or individual?
It doesn't. Any client that really just like made a general impact on you. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll speak speak about a corporate client. So there's a CEO who's a female. She identifies as a member of the LGBTQ plus community, white. And she reached out to me around the late summer of 2020. So again, when a lot of companies were having this awakening and looking within and realizing like there's some things we gotta do differently here following the murder of George Floyd.
Right.
And I always ask the question when people reach out to me, in particular around that time, because I've been doing this type of work since 2007.
Okay.
And I always ask them, why now? And what does diversity mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
And her explanation to me when I asked them why now, like, why do you want to focus on this for your organization now? Why is this important? She said, I understand my privilege as a white woman. I understand my privilege as, someone of, financial means.
Right.
And I have not really looked outside of my own experience to understand how others who aren't white, not from financial means, may have experienced challenges that ultimately doesn't mean that this country is really a meritocracy, which means that, you work hard enough, you'll be successful.
Right.
And so having that conversation with her early on in the process let me know that, A, she was doing this for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Her heart and mind were in the right place as a CEO.
Right.
That she was very vested in the journey in terms of putting resources behind the work. And I tell people resources mean people, time, and money.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, being the biggest advocate for ensuring that all employees within her organization, regardless of level, background, experience, where they come from, or even where they work, because they have offices all around the nation, that they feel a sense of belonging and inclusion. And she's also empowered the employees to say, look, because they're client-facing. So if a client comes in and they say something, like your example, like you people,
right,
or those people, you have the permission to address that in the moment and let them know why that is not appropriate.
Right.
And if you don't feel comfortable, take it to your manager and let your manager address it. And if the client decides they want to leave and take their business elsewhere, that's perfectly fine by me. I'm the CEO, and I'm letting you know that. It's
right.
Not about the dollar, it's about my people.
Right.
If you do right by your people, the dollars will come. And that, to me, was why I do this work. Like, if every single CEO could have that epiphany,
right,
every single CEO could really be that type of voice of empowerment for their people and for the organization as a whole. Doesn't mean they have to do the work, because this CEO, she's not doing the actual work, right?
Right.
She's empowering a council, she's empowered individuals and to do the work.
Right.
But she's the head or the executive sponsor of this work. And that, to me, says that,
that
organizations are going to grow and evolve in the right way. And they have. I've been working with them now for 2, and next year they've already renewed for next year.
Wow, that's really powerful. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I wish that a lot of CEOs would jump on board with that, because it's really necessary.
Okay.
It's really necessary. So how do we get in touch with Dr. Session, and how can we get a session with Dr. Session?
Well, a couple ways. I mean, the best way, of course, is through my website, so kanamsession.com, and it's K-A-N-A-M, for Marie, Session, S-E-S-S-I-O-N, no S at the end, .com.
Okay.
And alternatively, I'm on all social media platforms, very active on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I've done courses, just recorded my second course for them.
Okay.
My first course is still available, so, they can research me on LinkedIn. And
all right.
Anything that I have going on there. And then, all other social media platforms as well.
Nice. Well, it was very nice to speak to you and just collaborate, and I love what you're saying. I'm sure I'm going to have you back, because this is not enough time to get all that we need to know about this whole subject, because it's really impacting women, I would say, in the 40s and the 50s a lot right now. So definitely I want to have you back. We really do thank you for being here. And audience, remember to reach out to Dr. Session. And she is found on the all around. We found each other on LinkedIn. So make sure you reach out, because this is definitely something that's necessary. Be like that CEO wanting to empower everyone that's around you. Thank you so much.
If you don't mind, I would like to leave everyone. I do have a book available.
Oh, nice.
I'll send you a copy if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember, but it's called Working While Black.
No, I didn't get that.
Oh, you didn't? Okay, yeah. Working on Black, A Woman's Guide to Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. And
you're coming back.
Send you a copy.
Yes, you're coming back.
Okay, good. Yeah, definitely want to make that plug and let people make sure they can pick up a copy.
Okay.
All books are sold and also on my website.
Wonderful. And the title of the book one more time because I got excited.
It's called Working While Black, A Woman's Guide to Stop Being the Best Kept Secret.
Wow. Oh yeah, you're coming back. We have to go through this book. We're coming back. Definitely. I really thank you for being here. Thank you just for what you're saying and what you're doing, how you're showing up in the world for all of us and making and empowering other people. I thank you for that. All right. All right, audience. Thank you for being around here today. And we're going to say goodbye for the moment. Thank you so much again, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. Thank you, Dr. Session.
Thank you, Edna. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's here, the Omaha Steaks Cyber Sale. And there's no better time to score big savings on unforgettable gifts. USDA certified tender steaks, beefy burgers, premium air-chilled chicken, and so much more. There's something for everyone on your list. Don't wait. Shop now to save 50% site-wide and an extra 20% off select packages at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, sale ends December 2nd. Terms apply. See site for details.